Hi there and welcome to episode 36 of the Blue Envelope podcast. Today is Friday the 29th of May. Is that right? I think that's right. Anyway, hold on. Today is Friday the something of May, and joining you today, if he had a pound for every PPTQ top 8, he wouldn't even need a job to put his life straight, Mr. Matthew Light.
Hi guys.
He's been on Countdown and Soccer AM, but doing Grand Prix coverage.
Soccer 9, not Soccer AM.
It doesn't matter. I needed to add that in to make it rhyme.
Soccer PM.
I'll start again. He's been on Countdown and Soccer AM, but doing Grand Prix coverage is really where he's found his fame. Mr. Neil Rigby.
Hello.
And he's got a new game for us all to play today. Hopefully it won't be a pack rat that drives us all away. Dr. Rob Wagner.
No promises.
And he's going to Vancouver to play on the Pro Tour once more. He wants to see Matt cry as he X4s and qualifies for Milwaukee. That is me, Mr. Matteo Orsini-Jones. And, of course, they have the best deals this side of Vegas. Free cards on their loyalty scheme means choosers can actually be beggars. MagicMadhouse.co.uk. So, yeah, head over to MagicMadhouse.co.uk and check out our sponsors and the UK's biggest dealers to get anything from singles to accessories to sealed product, including all of the newest and latest sets, as well as a bunch of old stuff, foil stuff. And, of course, they have their buying list, which I sold a lot of cards to in the past, and they have their loyalty scheme, as I just mentioned, where every time you buy you get some percentage back in money which someone has bought beta power but not the full set, as previously mentioned. But anyway, how is everyone?
Yeah, good.
Played any Magic in last week?
Sick.
Not so much.
Wicked sick.
Yes, I have played some Magic in the last weekend.
How did that go?
I played the closing two PPTQs of the season.
And congratulations!
I lost the semi-finals on Saturday, and I lost the finals on Sunday.
Well, it's nice to end as you started.
Again.
Yeah.
The thing to remember, Matt, is it's not the winning, it's the taking part.
Yeah, you're the most takingest partingest person.
I know that you guys have obviously seen my stats on Facebook, but I'm going to say them here so that anyone listening who hasn't got me on Facebook can read them.
34,
read them, listen to them.
Was that you writing them down so people could read them?
That wouldn't have been very helpful at all. So I played this season. I came ninth right at the start at the RPTQ, which if I'd on breakers, which if my breaks had been like 1.5% better, I would have just qualified for the next RPTQ.
Think of all the tournaments you wouldn't have been able to play, though.
Well, I'm now going to think about and talk about them, Neil. the twelve PPTQs that I've played in the last two and a half months, of which I top eighted 10. 0-2 dropped one when I was really hungover and came ninth at one on tiebreakers because two guys were going to draw in the last round, but one of them conceded to the other so that one of them would make it and edge me out, which was depressing. So enough of my 10 top 8s. I've lost one final, four quarterfinals, and lost the finals an agonising 5 times, which puts me at total for PPTQs like over the two seasons at 14 played, 12 top 8s, 7 finals appearances.
That is some impressive statage, but let's not go onto that too much, because we are going to talk about that as our main topic today. We're going to talk about the PPTQs and Q season just gone and just our thoughts on PPTQs in general. And yeah, we're also going to have a new game from Rob, as I mentioned during his intro, so hopefully that will turn out fun. And if there's time, we might crack open another pack of Modern Masters and we'll have the usual trash to treasure. But, of course, before all that, Rob, can you tell us about back in the day this week in Magic history?
Hi, back in the day this week. We have to go not so far back. 2011 was GP Providence in the United States. It was the first American Legacy Grand Prix to be won by someone that wasn't actually a pro player. Prior to that, Legacy GPs were almost exclusively won by known pros. The first exception was actually a year prior. It was a Grand Prix in Madrid that both Matt and I top 32'd to some degree.
So lucky.
So this was after the banning of Survival of the Fittest, but before the banning of Mental Misstep. So it was in that interesting wedge, and there was some quite a lot of variety to the format. I think Mental Misstep had quite a big impact on the structure of what decks that were played, because Mental Misstep, for those that Answer where? One of my favourite cards ever. It's a single blue mana, but it's a Phyrexian blue mana, so you could also, you could pay two life instead. It's an instant, and it counters a spell with converted mana cost one. And the reason it's so good is that you can do it even on the draw, before you even have your first turn. You can counter something that costs one mana. It's done a number on Legacy, being able to counter Sol Ring and Ancestral Recall is quite a big deal. And it's shaped Legacy a lot. Suddenly you couldn't really rely on permanents or spells that cost one mana. I mean, you still play them, because you want your deck to not just be clunky as heck. You want to be able to actually do something with your turns. But it wasn't the same like you have nowadays, Deathrite Shaman and Delver of Secrets. Not that they were legal then, not that they existed then. But you weren't relying on these one mana spells. The power was all in the two drops. And that was evident. If you look at the top eight, there are a lot of one drops, but it was won by a Bant Stoneblade deck. Bant Blue White Green, obviously built around Stoneforge Mystic. And Stoneforge Mystic was the big winner in the Mental Misstep era, because it cost two mana rather than one, and it put stuff. It's just a powerful card anyway, but it meant that your power really was in the two drops. Like other beneficiaries of the Mental Misstep era were Tarmogoyf and Dark Confidant. Were any of you playing Legacy around this sort of time?
Yeah, I was playing a ton, and I think what's really interesting about this Grand Prix is basically exactly how you framed it right at the start, which is it's like just after Survival's been banned, but did you say 5 months before Misstep got banned eventually?
Yeah, it's about halfway between the two bannings. They were about a year apart, and it was about halfway in between the two.
Yeah, and like, because I remember that format right at the end, like just before Misstep got banned, because it basically got what you've just been saying just got continued, and it became really inbred. Like all of the blue-white Stoneforge decks, they just cut the pretense like of playing all of these one drops at all, like the Hyrucks, and just played Stoneforges. And then they were playing, like what's the Spellstutter Sprites?
Oh god, yeah.
Because when everyone's playing Mental Missteps and like one casting cost things, suddenly Spellstutter Sprites are king.
Yeah,
and you have Mutavolts instead of your.
Instead of like
Mishra's Factories, because then they can count on the two drops as well. And like, I remember loving playing that Magic and playing those decks, but that doesn't mean the format was healthy. And I remember playing this Bant Blade deck after this Grand Prix at a few sort of winner moxes in the UK, and it was brilliant because you did just ignore the games that everyone else was playing and like starting to go along that.
And there are a few other cards that became winners as well. There's a couple of standstill decks here. Another card that costs two mana. And also, if you're more easily able to answer things that cost one, that means you're not as likely to cast standstill onto a board that's got a disadvantageous position. You're not casting it into like a Wild and Cattle plus a Curdape or something.
Mm. Yeah, I mean, it really hit Goblins very hard, didn't it? Because before that, Goblins was always really good against all the blue decks. Because you had both Lackey and Aethervale on turn one that were absolutely insane at getting around their permission plans.
And this was while before Cavern of Souls.
Yeah, exactly. And then, so, which is why there's just like no goblins in this topic, whereas before you would probably have expected to see some, because the blue decks historically really struggled with the combination of like Lackey, Aethervale, and Goblin Ringleader.
Yeah, they didn't play
many
permanents.
But yeah, I get what you mean.
Yeah, there is.
I was just looking through all the lists and like, all of the lists are playing, apart from one, are playing three or four Mental Missteps. So it's like, obviously made a massive impact, like you said.
Yeah, I was just thinking, it's interesting actually that some of them only run three, including the winning deck list. Like, why would they run three and not four when it's just obvious that everyone's going to have targets?
Well, I think it's because everybody was, like, there was a lot of hype around the card before, like, as soon as it got spoiled. So I think maybe the people who were playing three were thinking that the one casting cost spells would drop off. But it seemed like, I think people playing four wanted them so you could counter your opponent's Mental Missteps.
Yeah.
Because there was lots of that going on, wasn't there?
Yeah, one thing that I think that basically this tournament's a really good starting point is that this era is the first nail in the coffin of the Zoo deck in Legacy.
Yeah, there's still one in the top eight, but it's the last one I remember seeing.
Yeah, because like, I remember when I got into Legacy, which was in the sort of three or four, maybe 5 months before Grand Prix Madrid in 2010?
I think it was 2010.
Like yeah, 2010. Was that Zoo was a big contender. Like, it was like, you wouldn't even consider not having it in your gauntlet, because it was great against, like, so much of the field. And you played it in Madrid, didn't you?
I played it in Madrid. I lost my penultimate round to not top eight. I told Richard Bland to play it, and
He did top 8.
Whether that was the advice he took or not, he did top 8 with it.
Yeah, whereas now it's just a joke deck. Like, if someone was playing Zoo,
you'd be like, oh,
in Legacy, I would actually laugh at them. Yeah, I'd actually just laugh.
Yeah. So I was saying, that GP, Richard Bland got so lucky. Like, every time I went to watch him play, he'd just go, like, turn 1 Nakatl, turn 2 Goyf.
This is Madrid, not the Providence one.
The Madrid one that Richard top 8 did, not the Providence one that he didn't play.
Yeah.
Also, like, the picture of the winner in the Providence one, I don't know why, but to me it looks like his head's caught in his hoodie and he's, like, trying to force it out for the photo, but he can't quite manage. Like, the photo where he's holding the trophy, you see what I mean? Where it's, like,
yeah,
trying to make it look like his head's not caught in his hoodie, but it actually is, because his head's just tilted backside and he looks like he's slightly distressed. But I think he's actually just trying to be cool and have a hoodie on.
So, an interesting omission from this top 8. People who play Legacy a lot now will know that basically the defining deck of Legacy is Counterbalance, which relies on the card Counterbalance, 2-mana enchantment, which whenever a opponent casts a spell, you may reveal the top card of your library if it matches converted mana cost counter their spell, and Sensei's Divining Top, a 1-mana artifact that lets you rearrange your deck. Both those cards actually were legal at this point for several years, and they had been played in Standstill decks as well. But there's no sign of them here. I'm not sure why that is. My guess is that Mental Misstep diversifying converted mana costs means it's much harder for Counterbalance to be more reliable.
It does also mean that more people are playing 2-drops, though, rather than... Like, there's kind of a glut of 2-drops compared to normal. Yeah. They just hadn't caught on yet.
But there weren't Miracles, the cards, or the mechanic then. Like, Terminus didn't exist then, which is what the defining card was. So if you saw Counterbalance back then, it was as part of a Standstill deck. Probably a blue-black-green deck, if anything.
I think there was a Counterbalance Natural Order, a Counterbalance Natural Order deck, Bant deck at Grand Prix Madrid.
Yes, I think I remember seeing that.
I'm just going to have a quick look and find that for you, because I think I remember playing it in the tournament afterwards and really loving it. It was called Countertop Progenitus, which is a Bant deck with Noble Hierarchs.
So you can actually counter your opponent's Progenitus.
if they reveal one, you like, if they try and casting one, hard cast it, you're like, come on, top deck.
Counter their Kozilek. Counter their Progenitus.
I once won a game of Extended at the time when I was playing Hypergenesis. When he'd extirpated all of my Hypergenesis. Hypergenesi?
Gosh knows.
Hypergeni? Genii?
Hypergenes? Genesis, I think. ES.
Anyway.
Can you have more than one Genesis?
Yeah. What if something created and then it's all destroyed again? You need another Genesis, don't you?
Regenesis? Who's around to say that it's the second one?
God.
anyway, so... what was I saying? Oh yeah, and I had a couple of the storage lands from Time Spiral and like a couple of Gemstone Mines and a couple of like City of Brasses, and I hardcast a Progenesis. And then he countered it, so I hardcast another one.
I've podcast Progenitus in draft many times.
Really?
I kind of made it my goal in that format. I think I might have done it in Pro Tour Hawaii.
That's pretty cool.
I think the coolest thing I've done was bribery somebody's daughter nothingness and beat them with it.
Nice.
Not bribery, the one that does artifacts.
Yeah, you didn't bribe your opponent before anyone writes in.
what's the blue card that steals them?
Something like that.
I don't know of it.
I took his daughter nothingness and beat him with it. Well, I don't think I've ever. I think I might have won. Have I cast a Progenitus?
Beat him with it or won the game with it?
Won the game with it.
Picked it up off the table
and just. Doosh.
It would take quite a while to beat somebody with a card.
Yeah. Speaking of beating somebody with a card, did you guys hear about the Danish radio presenter that beat a rabbit to death on air?
What?
No.
Why would we have... What?
I'm really hoping that there's a punchline to this and it's not just an actual thing that happened in the world. Recently.
The punchline? Yeah, that's what the rabbit got.
He apparently was trying to make a statement about the hypocrisy of people who eat meat by saying, why do you eat meat, but then you're opposed to me killing a rabbit on air. So I think he's actually like a vegetarian warrior, but he decided to beat to death a rabbit with a bicycle pump live on air.
Did he inflate it, or...?
What, the rabbit?
No, he just hit it over the head a few times, then ringed its neck. Anyway, should we move on?
Yeah.
It is ringed, isn't it?
Google that one. I'll put that in the show notes.
Thanks, Mateo, for that. That's right. That's good.
And on that delightful note, we'll move on.
Should we talk about PPTQs?
Yeah, good. On the plus, there's always the danger that me talking about PPTQs is going to become like really like dark and depressing, like the episode after the RPTQ. So now you've already like lowered the,
like we are flogging a dead horse.
You've lowered the tone. flogging a dead bunny. you've lowered the tone and the mood enough that
it's only uphill from here.
Yeah.
Cool. So what was our favourite thing about PPTQs? Matt, you played in all of them. Do you have like one resounding memory? Do you like as you look back?
Which was your favourite?
You lost so much. Do you have like a sort of? I liked this system because
to be fair,
you have like one thing you can pinpoint.
To be fair, he hasn't lost very much. He's won like 80-odd% of his matches.
Yeah,
it's true.
It's yeah.
Because I didn't actually get a chance to play in that many, but I would imagine for me, if I had done, I think I would have just thought, well, actually, I just enjoyed having a tournament to play in every weekend, which is kind of what they were going
yeah,
for, isn't it? Did you feel that?
Yeah, I think that's absolutely great. And I know I've got a lot of feedback from people who won a really early one, which I'm obviously jealous of. Well done, guys. Being like, well, all the magic now is PPTQs, and I can't play one. This is really sad.
Yeah.
Like you got a lot of that, but yeah, I've really enjoyed like being able to, because I've not really got downhearted about the fact that I hadn't qualified at all this season, like right up to the end. So I was always pleased that like there was somewhere within an hour and a half of my house drive to play like a reasonably costed tournament, which would have reasonably good prizes. That could get me towards a Pro Tour. Like, that was brilliant. Like, and really, really good for the game.
I was going to say, it was going to be quite interesting for me, because in the first season, you had the crossover of old-style PTQs and PPTQs, and I always chose the old-style PTQs to go to. And then, when that ended, I just had, like, personal stuff going on, so I couldn't go to many. And then in the second season, I've been really busy with GPs and stuff, so I've not had a chance to play many PPTQs, but next season, like this season coming up, I'm nowhere near as busy, so I'm going to get to like properly see how this system works. So I probably have more of a thing on it, because like there's only like two GPs I'm going to in the next couple of months, so we'll have many more free weekends. Well, free Sundays, because that's part of my problem is obviously I do, even when I'm not at a GP, I still work Saturdays, so I only get one day of the weekend to actually play my magic. But like Matt said, the fact that, or Matteo mentioned, sorry, the fact that there's going to be, or there's likely to be a tournament every week in a reasonable distance is quite exciting, I guess.
Yeah, yeah. I think one main thing that has already been said is that like if you do win one early, that means you now can't play in any other. So like you watch your friend, if you are a tournament player who's used to going to tournament every week, normally you would have gone to say GPTs with your like other core group of competitive players, but now everyone's just going to the other PPTQs that you can't go to, so it must feel a bit like, oh, I have no magic to play now, what do I do for the next 2 months, just because there are no tournaments to go in. And I think that's interesting, because like you said, it didn't happen in the first season because there were still all-star PTQs, and I don't know if that's something that Wizards considered and whether they thought of a way of tackling it.
I think that a big thing to remember is that this isn't worse, though, than how it was when we just had the old system. So when we had just PTQs, if you won one of those early, you couldn't play any of those either.
No, but because there was only like six PTQs in a season,
you were prepared for it, right?
More a case of like in the in-between weeks, there's a tournament. Whereas now if you win the first PPTQ, everybody's playing PPTQs. So on a weekend, you go, what do I do? And you go, oh, well, I can play F&M again, but I always got to play F&M. So what do I do Saturday and Sunday?
Yeah, so in a way, we're now too spoiled. Yeah, we're too spoiled because there are too many PTQs. So in a way, now it's like, even after just one season, we're now used to having, oh, all these tournaments I can go to, which means as soon as you win one, you don't have that anymore. Whereas before, it was a case of, oh, every 3 or so weeks, there's a big PTQ that I can go to. But if not, oh, you know, I'll go to another tournament, I'll just go around my friend's house and draft. But in the new system, they're probably at the PPTQ, so you can't do that.
Yeah.
And like that is, obviously, there's a massive upside on having all these tournaments, but that is a weird downside that you wouldn't really consider until you like reflect on having won one already. Obviously, Matt, you wouldn't know. But for the people that have won one early, although you did it last season.
Yeah, I did it last season, I did, yeah.
Yeah, like, but like we're saying, last season there were still the old PTQs.
One of the things that made me like so sad this season was... because last season after I won one early, I got my level 1, or I'd got my level 1 and then did loads of judging at them, and then this time I planned to do the same, but then obviously couldn't at all.
Yeah,
I was going to say, like, if you'd come eighth at the RPTQ, what would your 12 weeks, your 12 PPTQ weekends consisted of? Is sort of the, like you were saying, you've got your level one, so you'd go and try and judge. But if somebody doesn't have their level one, that, I think that's the sort of like crux of what Matteo's saying.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think so. I think a fairly easy fix I'm trying to get at is possibly saying you can still play in them even if you're qualified, but then
does
that
the
gets
slot
onto
move
a,
down?
Yeah, well, no, that's the thing. I think that would be getting onto. Maybe we should talk about it later. Basically, revolutionising the system, saying it's a points-based system instead of a first place gets the prize system.
Yeah, should we shelve that till?
Yeah.
Then? All right. Yeah, let's shelve that. In which case, let's next talk about why do we think attendance was so low. So it's been noticed that I think was it Dave Salisbury that put up stats for the UK PPTQs, and he's basically what he's written in summary is that the attendance was a lot lower this season than last season, and I think that's to be expected. When the season is new, everyone's going to turn up. Like, pre-release weekend's going to have more turnout than just a generic sealed tournament 2 weeks into the set, just because people like new things. So I think that's kind of a statistical anomaly you can just account for and not pay too much attention to. But like, are there any other reasons that we can pinpoint, do you think, on why have fewer people gone to these?
I think...
Go on,
Neil. I insist.
I was just going to say, like, it may just be that we've got... Like you said, you've got used to the fact that you're going to have these opportunities, so you don't need to go to them. If you get what I mean? Like, you can sort of go... I'm going to have X number of opportunities. I can choose to have X number of opportunities to qualify.
I think that was true for the first season, though. Like, the point... Well, the question I'm trying to ask is, why is it different from the first season to the second season? Why did attendance drop so drastically?
Historically, there is a drop in attendance about this sort of time of year anyway. There's a lot of people who play Magic are students, and there's a lot of exams about this sort of time of year. Mm. That's a historical thing. That's not this year. So... I don't know if that's just a continued effect. I'm not sure if it's something we can detect, really.
The difficult second album is always a tricky one as well, isn't it? Yeah, but something we briefly discussed beforehand as well is the kind of lack of... Maybe not advertising the right word, but Matt, you pointed out, didn't you, that because pros are the ones that normally talk about tournaments, they're the ones that drive the advertisement for the Pro Tour. So they'll write about the Pro Tour, people read about it and go, that's amazing, and think, I want to qualify and go to tournaments. But because pros don't play in PPTQs, no one's actually writing about it. So in the first season, all the advertisement came from Wizards themselves. And, you know, they advertise it through Pro Tour streams, they advertise it through various forms. And so anyone, regardless of their pro level, will have heard the announcements. Whereas with the new season, people aren't really talking about it anymore. Because, like I said, people who write articles probably aren't playing in PPTQs. Is that, I mean, I don't read that many articles, but has anyone kind of noticed a trend of actually you just haven't heard about PPTQs recently other than Matt's Facebook feed?
Yeah, I think this is like... I'm not sure if I'd necessarily go so far as to call it a problem, but it's quite an interesting thing. Like, I can't really sum up much better than what you're saying, but like when we started to talk about like doing this episode like this, one of the first things we would always do is try and look for resources that are analysing this data. And that are analysing like people's experiences and stuff, and there just isn't any.
Well, it was like, something I mentioned, wasn't it? Where because of their relative size, they sort of don't. You used to get PTQ reports because the PTQ was 9 rounds, so
yeah, winning one felt good as well.
Yeah, winning one was like a massive achievement.
I've achieved what I set out to achieve when I started playing competitively. That's what most people felt when they won a PTQ.
Yeah, and these feel much smaller and that, like, a bit like GPTs, and nobody ever wrote GPT reports,
no.
Really.
Yeah.
And because they're generally like 40 players, they're like 5 rounds, and people are just like, oh, I went 3-2, 4-1, made top 8. So nobody's, no non pros are writing anything about them.
Yeah, I think this is. I mean, I remember speaking to our sponsors about this. We were just generally chatting about the podcast and articles and stuff. And he was saying to me, yeah, I mean, occasionally we get people offering to give us PPTQ tournament reports, but like there's not a lot of content there and nobody wants to read them. And so a big part of, like, and normally it's tournament reports that tended to historically like, especially when they were really good or from a really interesting tournament, have like a little gleam of like extra knowledge or truth or like the beginning of a discussion point that would then grow, like be fanned into flames by like people reading it and then other people writing about it. And obviously that's not going to happen for PPTQs. I think that the one of you mentioned it earlier, they're sort of going the way of GPTs, and I think that everyone, the reason that GPTs like aren't interesting, aren't exciting, and aren't fun, and are because everyone already has two buys, and all the people that already have two buys aren't going to play them and aren't interested in them, and they're the people that would be like rallying communities to go to tournaments a lot of the time, and they're the people that would be writing articles and having big chat about them. And I think that PPTQs are definitely going that way, and I don't know if that's a good thing. Maybe it is. I mean, maybe that's fine.
I think that's sort of what Wizards were aiming for.
Do you think?
I sort of think so. I think they kind of want them to feel like a local tournament that like locals win. So, I mean, from the stats from the first RPTQ, you know how I got people to write in and tell us where they won their PTQ amongst other things. Something I noticed that's quite interesting is that well over half, like a significant percentage of players had qualified in their local shop. So it said, like, where are you from? This city. Where did you qualify? This same city. And that was something that just wasn't true for old star PTQs. Maybe the Scottish one would be won by Stephen Murray, and that was just always was. But it was interesting because people travelled a lot more for them. But now I feel like what Wizards are actually trying to promote is going at, like, every store has its PPTQ, and the champion of that is going to be like the best player in that area. And then the RPTQ is going to be a collection of all the best local champions. And like, I think that promotes the kind of store feel, like the store is kind of sending their representative to the RPTQ. And I think that's what Wizards want, and I think personally that's a good thing for Magic. I think that's something that is going to get people into the spirit of wanting to compete more.
I think that's true, and I think that what it also did was, to build on that a little, is when multiple people from the same like games club or the same area qualified, they would then work together and prepare in a really cool, tight-knit way. Like, you got it a lot at... like, I could have told you before the RPTQ in London who was working together and what I thought they would maybe be playing and, like, how much preparation they would be doing. And that's really cool, because that's just quite exciting. I think that whenever something put in place at the grassroots level, or at like the lower level, like when you're trying to get on the Pro Tour and you're trying to be a bit more competitive, you want to play a bit more Magic at the weekend, when those things happen, when they like have any kind of like mirroring or echo or trace of like the Pro Tour and the Dream and all the cool stuff that we want to watch, like the reasons we're going to tune into GPs Utrecht and Vegas and Chiba this weekend, whenever it's got a hint of that, that's awesome and people love that. And I think that in that respect it does have an element of that, and that's really cool.
Yeah, definitely. It's the kind of gradual trickling into bigger things. So, like, with each kind of small victory of each local player at their local PPT, you start to think, oh, maybe we're going to make it. And then as you get close to the RPTQ, you think, oh, you know, that dream's a tiny bit closer. And at the All-Star PTQs, it used to be kind of like round by round. Like, every round you win, you start thinking, well, actually, this dream might be a reality. But in this way, because there's such a big gap between the PPTQ and the RPTQ, you have that feeling for longer where it's kind of like, I'm almost there. I know I'm not there, but I'm almost there, and I just need to work for it a bit, and it can happen.
I think that's quite cool. I've not thought about it in those terms, where like that anticipation of like this tournament is coming and it's my shot is bigger. That's really, really good. Go on.
I was just going to move on to the formats and how we feel about formats. So to quickly summarise, when they first did them, they said that they're all going to be either limited, standard or modern, but you can choose, you know, the TO can choose, they can decide what their local players might want and go for that. But what actually happened is most people just ran standard because it was easiest. So what they've now done is said, actually, if it's going to be constructed, it has to be the format of the Pro Tour. Thoughts?
I wish it didn't have to be this way. Because it seems like it would have been nice if you could just run three and there was like an even mix and everyone got to play all the Magic that they wanted. So I wish there didn't have to be a rule to make people have to sanction Modern. Because I wish people were just doing it anyway. And another thing is, I do love Modern though, so I am really excited to have loads of Modern ones to play.
That's interesting that you don't like it, because I think that's actually, I just can't like see anything wrong with that change. I just agree with it completely, because one of the most annoying things with old style PTQs is that you'd qualify playing, say, block constructed, and the Pro Tour was extended, and you'd think, well, I don't have any of these cards. I've got my block constructed deck. What do I do?
No, I agree. I think it'd be nice if we lived in a world where it didn't have to be enforced, but they've tried and it doesn't work like that. So it does have to be enforced like that.
I think it'd be quite interesting to see how it affects attendance.
Just to clarify, like, is this the same in reverse? Is this the same for standard ones?
Standard Pro Tours need to have standard PPTQs.
So for 75%, so that's just going to be less modern overall?
Yeah.
Because 75% of them you won't be able to sanction modern?
Yeah, correct.
I'm sure they'll... surely that won't be right. People would want to play too much modern, like... That would make me very sad if, like...
Well, you can't
play modern for three quarters of the year.
Are there three standard Pro Tours a year?
Yeah,
there's three in one. I mean, what might happen is they end up going, actually, no, it's too standard, too modern.
Yeah.
Because they keep cutting out modern and slowly bringing it back in because the player base is going, actually, we love modern.
Yeah, and I remember thinking that the modern ones would be really small, the modern PPTQs, but they haven't been. Like, the modern ones I've played have all been, like... So this weekend in England, I mean, most people will know about this, there was a massive... there was a massive Eternal weekend of like Legacy and Vintage, and then there was the massive Modern Masters PPTQ and GPTs and stuff, which both had like huge attendances. And I went to a Modern PPTQ on the Saturday that was basically wedged in between the two of them, and it still had 35 players.
Mm.
So, which I wouldn't have expected. I would have expected it to be like maybe 20, but people do love Modern.
Yeah,
which is great.
35 is already above average in attendance, isn't it? It's only about 30.
Yeah.
Where was that? Was that Birmingham?
Yes, it was.
They had 32, but I was just looking at the ones, because on the same day there was 13 playing Modern in Cambridge as well.
Yeah.
And that's with 182 people at the Modern Master Sealed one. Oh no, that's on Monday, sorry. That was on Monday, wasn't it? Was that on Monday? Or was that on Saturday? What's the date?
I think it's Saturday.
That's PPTQ in Axiom.
Yeah.
So.
So that's a massive number of people playing PPTQs that day.
Yeah, it's pretty cool, isn't it?
Whilst also, like you said, that was the Vintage Championship was that day.
Yeah, which had like 60 players, 50 players, I think.
Mm-hmm.
It was also Bank Holiday weekend, and people will generally be away for all 3 days for that weekend, weren't they?
Yeah. I didn't get to go to any of them because I was working.
Yeah, well, I was away for all 3 days, so didn't get to play in any.
One thing that I've noticed for... one thing that I do think is great, which I know I've mentioned before on the podcast, is that I think that these are really good for the standard of play in the UK. Because people are playing competitive... Like I've been doing, are playing competitive Magic tournaments every weekend and doing a bit of work to prepare for them. People are, like, playing more and getting much better.
Yeah.
And it's the people that... I'm going to mention a few names here, and I hope that I don't do this in a way that's, like, sounds like patronising or anything, but, like, people like the Channing brothers and like George Burrow and Kaya, whose surname I've forgotten.
Patel?
Is it Patel? Yeah. Kaya Patel, who all won PPTQs this season. Like, I've known George a little while, I've known Kaya a little while, but the Channings are basically new to the end of 2014. And, like, I've seen them come from, like, in, like, November to now, and the same for George and Kaya, from being, like, people that I would call, like, relatively competitive players who play all the time, who I expect to see at tournaments, to people that I now expect to see at the top end of the tournament, making runs for top eights. If it's a PPTQ, I'd expect them to top eight, and if they win, I'm not at all surprised. And given that George beat me in the finals, I'm obviously not at all surprised he won that tournament, but well done, George. But yeah, and so like the standard of play, and that trickles down into people's groups, because everyone's bringing in more people to prepare with and travelling to tournaments with, and so like everyone is just getting better and better, which I think is awesome, and I'm really excited in the UK for that to be happening.
I'm getting worse and worse.
I'm still the best, so
it's alright, Rob. I'll help whip you into shape for Lille.
GP Lille.
So that's something that genuinely excites me when I think about it.
Cool. Shall we talk about how we think we'd like to see them going forward then?
Basically,
our shelved topic.
Basically, I don't think that I don't want people to be in the situation that I'm in this season. I think that it's like I've had like loads of like really warm, really wonderful messages from people.
Most of them sarcastic.
No, like a lot of them genuine. Like when George beat me in the final on Sunday, and like George and I are friends, and like whenever there's a tournament in the North of England, I'm always really pleased to see him because I don't see him otherwise because we live hours apart. But he was like, "I'm genuinely gutted for you that you didn't win this one. Like I know I beat you, and obviously I'm pleased to have won, but that's really rough." And like all the people when I like it got to the point at the end of the season where like everyone knew like my results. Everyone knew that this was my like 8th, 9th, 10th top 8, and like everyone's seen that, like everyone expects me to win, and then when I don't, there's like multiple people like tapping me on the shoulder and like buying me a pint or whatever, because like there's this huge communal experience. But I don't want to have to see that happen to someone else, because it is rubbish
when people buy you like, pints.
When like if someone told me these sorts of like numbers, like it, you'd have to be like, wow, that's awful. And like lots of people have asked me if I'm going to quit and things like that, and if I'm going to keep playing, and like obviously probably not, but like it's a strong incentive to, if that makes sense, like that sort of level of near misses. And I think that it's quite easy to find a fix to that.
Like, yeah, think, so,
go on.
I was just saying that the main thing that I assume a lot of people have mentioned it, I've like discussed it with a few different people, but the main thing that you could do is introduce a point system, which has been used in previous Magic systems like the JSS as well as other games. So a few people have mentioned that it used to be the case in World of Warcraft Nationals, is that right?
Yeah.
I've never played it, but you and Neil used to play it, didn't you?
Yeah.
So how did that work?
They had regional qualifiers, essentially, and it was based on a point system. You needed so many points to qualify for the Nationals, and it was, you needed 10 points to qualify for Nationals. You got 2 points for turning up to one of the regional qualifiers. So if you played in 5, you got enough to qualify. And if you came first, you got 10 points. If you came second, you got 6, I think it was. And then 4 for losing in the semis, and 3 for losing in the quarters. So, like, if you were in Matt's situation and you went lose a final, lose a semis, that gave you your 10 points and you were qualified, so you didn't need to keep on going to actually win. And obviously you end up with more people qualifying that way, and I suppose in some ways it bring up the old Planeswalker points thing where you can just throw enough crap and some will stick.
I think this is
without
the
wanting
big,
to word it badly.
Yeah, I think that's the biggest, like the biggest barrier and the biggest concern people would have to some sort of point system is you have to work hard to get it right, because you don't want people just playing and then getting
essentially
there.
Buying their way in.
Yeah, you want, which is why I don't think you would be able to have like an amount of points for turning up.
Yeah, it'd have to be like top eight or equal record get 2 points.
Yeah, or they could do it like even just a simple fractions method, like 2 finals losses equals a win, and then 2 semifinals losses equals a finals loss, 2 quarterfinals losses equals a semifinals loss.
I think even doing that would be a bit risky. I think you'd have to stack it even more, like against the non-first place people. So it should be like 4 finals losses equals a win or something like that. So
I mean,
you get 20 points for a win, and you get 5 for a second, and 3 for a third or fourth,
like,
and so on.
What I suggested would definitely need a lot of work.
Readjusting.
Otherwise you'll start getting chains of people who've lost one final. If they make it to a final, they're just going to concede.
Yeah.
Because then 2 people qualify. So what I said outright isn't what I would want to do. But I think it's somewhere between what I'm saying and what you're saying about points is the right sort of way.
Yeah.
I think in an ideal system, it would add maybe 5 to 10 players to the RPTQ that wouldn't got there.
I think it depends on how many people they want to qualify. Because of the things I was thinking was, it's something I suggested to, I might have just mentioned it in the shop when we were talking about it, was if they do want to push up qualification slightly and give an alternate way of qualifying, is where they used to give Pro Tour slots to the top 16 at a GP, you could give RPTQ slots to the people who top 16 at a GP. I know that's like slightly off topic from the PPTQs, but like it sort of like links into the how many people do they actually want to qualify for the RPTQ. It might just be that they're like, we want the numbers we had
really
last time were exactly what we were looking for, hoping for.
Well, so, do you automatically get an RPTQ slot if you've played on the previous Pro Tour?
No, you don't.
The
only way to get RPTQ slots is being silver and winning a PPTQ or top 8ing
the previous RPTQ.
In that vein, I think that giving away RPTQ slots at GPs is a great idea.
I really liked that as an idea.
Because you don't have to give very many. So you give like maybe 8. Like in this thing that Neil's suggesting. A lot of them are going to be to people that already have them. And it links up all of Magic together, and I think that that's always a good thing to do.
I'm not sure I want that link together. I see RPTQs and I see GPs as separate routes to the Pro Tour.
But there's no downside to that, right? Like, who feels bad if the person that comes ninth at the GP gets an RPTQ slot? Who feels bad?
If you're adding people into the RPTQs, I feel that they'll be better served by adding people who've been playing at PPTQs.
But it doesn't have to be an either-or, does it? Like, we're not necessarily talking about these as competing systems.
I think they have a certain number of people they can admit to an RPTQ. And so I think if they're going to increase it, I would rather see it, though, to people going to PPTQs. I think it is probably an either-or at this stage. I don't know how many they want to go into these things.
That stops people going to GPs. Because a GP, top 8 in a GP is much harder than...
A
lot of tournaments. At which point you take a weekend off to go to a GP, which is two RPTQs you could go, two PPTQs you could go to.
Yeah,
and
even
top 16 in a GP is really hard.
I disagree with Rob. I think it would be. I don't think there'd be any downside to having multiple paths. Like, there always were multiple paths for Pro Tours and Nationals. Like, for Nationals, you could win a Nationals qualifier, or you could have a certain rating, or you could be a pro level. And I don't know if I've mentioned it, but I did top 4 a Grand Prix a couple of weeks ago. And it does feel weird for me that I'm qualified for the next Pro Tour.
No matter how badly you tried not to, did.
But not for the RPTQ, because when I first did it, I thought I was qualified for the Pro Tour that these PPTQs are feeding.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh, it's fine that I lost in the top 8 of that one I played because I'm now qualified. But then I realised, oh, no, wait, it's not the same Pro Tour.
I think people at the Pro Tour should qualify for the next RPTQ. I'm not saying that should link through from GPs. I think it should be people who are on the Pro Tour should get to the RPTQs.
So GPs are literally just a completely separate entity to anything
Neil, because the top 8 also gets you to the next Pro Tour, which will get you to the RPTQ after that.
Yeah, so it's indirectly the people who come top of a GP will get to go to the RPTQs as well. But it's because they go to a Pro Tour and then they get the next RPTQ as well.
If you win
a Grand Prix, you're qualified for the next Pro Tour.
Yeah.
When you play that Pro Tour, I'm saying you should then become qualified for the subsequent RPTQ.
Oh, so you just got double bonus for top 8 in, and if you don't top 8,
no,
unlucky
I
mate.
Think, well, no, you
no,
shouldn't
saying,
really...
However you got onto the Pro Tour, you get to play the RPTQ.
I think the thing that we're really highlighting in this, and it goes back to what Matteo was saying, is that all of the timings feel a bit skewed at the moment. So Matteo's qualified for the next Pro Tour in Vancouver, but now, like, he doesn't have a way of getting to the RPTQ for Milwaukee. He has to do that from the Pro Tour or a GP.
Yeah.
And so, like, one of the routes is like weird, and so maybe that's something that could do with being. I don't know if there's any fix for that though.
Just sorting the timing out.
Maybe.
Well, we did just discuss a fix of hand out more RPTQs, PTQ invites at say Grand Prix and Pro Tours.
Yeah.
It would only be about 8 per GP, which admittedly would add quite a lot to the RPTQ number, so we're just kind of making an entire new system here. I don't know if the GP path is
We wouldn't add 8 more people per GP, would it? Because a lot of people who are top 8 in GPs are going to be qualified for RPTQs or just the Pro Tours already.
I thought we were suggesting that, say, the top 8 qualify for the Pro Tour but not the RPTQ, and then the top, so like 9 to 16 qualify for the RPTQ but not the Pro Tour, something like that. In the same way that the RPTQ top 4 is Pro Tour and top 8, as in 5 to 8, or RPTQ or something like that.
That's interesting. I think they're trying to move away.
Scaled system.
I think they're also trying to move away from prize structures that are set numbers rather than set records. Because obviously, you have to cut to top 8. That's the only way you can have that knockout for the quarter semis finals. But it really feel bad when you get the same record as someone and £1,000 less or whatever it happens to be.
Matt's case.
Yeah, so that's something I always tried to do when I was a TO, and I encouraged other TOs and complained at them when they didn't, was say, look, just because they've got different records, I know you have to make a cut-off for the tournament, but you don't have to make a cut-off for the prizes. It should be the same. And more, like, I think most TOs do it that way.
That way now, yeah.
Most TOs do prizes based on Swiss points at this point.
But that wasn't always the case.
Numbers of points.
Yeah, let's just say it was Rob that introduced that system.
Yeah, I call it the Wagner system. It was my idea.
But
the guy of X Factor.
Yeah, that's the one, yeah.
That's Wagner. But interesting, like, something that I think Tim Willoughby mentioned this first to me, but it just seems like an obvious fix, basically making it the RPTQ so that, like you said, rather than just saying the top eight straight cut is qualified for the next one, just say anyone who has the same number of points
as
the top eight qualify. So Matt would have qualified, but I'm sure he's not the only one that missed out across the world. There must have been others as well who went home
I think there was others at this RPTQ. It was just that Matt happened to be ninth.
Oh, were there?
No, there weren't.
Well, were you the only person on those points to miss out?
Yes.
Daggers.
Yeah. So Matt effectively...
Because the other guy made it.
Yeah, so you made did just as well as a guy who lost his quarters, but they qualified and you didn't, and it's like, that doesn't really seem fair. If anything, you did better because they lost one more match than you. But
yeah. It's also, like... Very good. It's also the same as... you're saying, it's the same as how Pro Tours and Grand Prix work. And I think that any time that you have that working at one level and then not at another, people are sort of going to be like... It's kind of like the almost like the reason that you can't have the things on camera at the Pro Tour being rewound. People feel sour when it's different rules for different reasons for different things in Magic. So like,
or in life.
Yeah, definitely. Like inequality. People famously aren't a big fan of inequality.
Well, they seem to tolerate a lot more than they say they do. But oh well.
Yeah. I think historically people actually are quite big fans of inequality.
Yeah, as long as they're on the good side.
Yeah, exactly. Depending on your skin colour and gender, that's fine.
There was a picture doing the rounds on the internet, like a little comic the other day about a teacher in a like sociology class who said something along the lines of that everyone in like the West basically has the chance at social mobility and like moving up the ladder. And he was like, to illustrate this, he like got the bin and put it right at the front of the class under the whiteboard, and everyone had a sheet of paper in front of them.
Yeah, I know.
And like scrumpled it all up, and he was like, right, screw it up, and they're like, sure. And then it was like, everyone throw it from your seat, and it was one of these lecture theatres that goes up and up and up and up and back. Everyone throw it, and if you get it in the bin, basically you're one of the ones. And like all the people at the back started complaining that it wasn't fair, and all the people at the front just started getting ready to take their shot.
Yeah.
And it's like, and that's how it is. It's like the people at the front don't complain about inequality and so on and so forth.
People at the back have still got a chance.
They just see the thing between them and their goal, like the 10 feet of space, and don't think about anything else.
Yeah.
Sorry, that was just something I enjoyed.
Yeah.
I think the system's really great, but I think there are loads of things that should probably change. Sorry, go on.
I personally big fan of adding the slots on for GP. Yeah. Is it 37 points you need at a GP to qualify for the Pro Tour? And if it was 34 qualifies you for the RPTU. So that it's not a cut off on number, it's
I see. One for your
If you're one win short of what would get you in the Pro Tour, you get an RPTQ slot.
Yeah, so X3 effectively.
I don't know how many people that adds in, like obviously at Vegas it could add 4.5 million people.
Well, I mean, yeah, they can hit, so with schemes like this, they've got all the data. They could count back and see what would have happened if it was the case.
Yeah,
and they could decide if that's an acceptable number.
Yeah,
and see how many Matt doesn't qualify.
See if those people were already qualified.
Because yeah, like, exactly. The
top 16 of most GPs has like at least 4 people who are silver plus.
Yeah,
who are already qualified.
Yeah, like all these GPs. I mean, I got a selection bias when I come up with these back in the day GPs, but a lot of them have got all these pro players and people you've heard of all the time.
Yeah.
Quick tangent. Did anyone see the graph that showed GP attendance over the last 5 years? I think it was.
No,
I saw it shared by Svein Bjørnerud on Twitter.
Okay, it was basically just split by region GP attendance over the last 5 years, and North America has shown a sort of steady incline. Latin America has been flatlined. Japan's shown a massive increase in gradient recently, and Europe interestingly peaked in 2010, has been going down slowly since. It's got like a slight uprise in last year, But it, yeah, like I said, it went up and up until 2010 and just dropped massively.
We have to be slightly careful interpreting the data. God, I am a maths teacher. it looks like Japan's gone up heavily. So 2010 to 2011, everywhere's GP attendance went down. 2011 to 2012, everywhere except Japan's, basically, GP attendance went down. Remember, there was a global recession then, so that affected a lot of people's ability to just go to GPs, essentially. But Japan itself is a corner case because they only have, what, three, four GPs a year? Well, GPs vary heavily by format. If you look at the format, so standard from 2012 onwards, average GP attendance of 1,100, but team limited, 1,600, legacy, 1,600. So if Japan's having more of these GPs that attract more players, it's going to increase their average attendance heavily compared to if they had the GPs which attract fewer players. So it might be that it's skewed by formats that the few GPs that they get, if they're different formats to what they historically were, that's going to change the data. It is quite a big change, so I'm not sure how much that could account for.
Thanks, Mr. Wagner.
Dr. Wagner.
are we going to get tested on that next episode?
This will not be on the test.
But yes.
Anyway, shall we? Are we done with PVTQ? Should we play a game?
Oh, I was looking at a graph, but all right.
Not while we're recording, Rob.
So, Rob, you've got a game for this week, haven't you?
I've got a brand spanking, shiny new game that I've cracked straight out of the pack.
I just want to put on the record my trepidation at all new games on the podcast. Like, I've been burned horribly badly before.
So it's based on an old game. I'm calling it Rackpat.
Spectral Progression and Trash to Treasure. I like those. They're old favourites. I don't like change.
I like Entreat the Angels. So I think Nameless Inversion is my favourite.
Yeah.
Is that what we decided to call it?
Yeah, the translation one.
Yeah.
Yeah,
I like that one. So anyway, I'm calling this one Common Bond. So,
cheeky.
What happens is I'll name a category and you have to pick the odd one out. So this week's theme, the odd one out, will be the one that has not been in a Pro Tour winning deck from the following cycles. So the categories are going to be cycles of cards. You have to tell me what is the name of the one that didn't win a Pro Tour. Now, I gathered the information using, do you know the alterer, the artist, Eric Klug? He's got this Pro Tour cube. So he's taken all the data himself. So I don't know the actual Pro Tours where these things did win, but he's got all the data. It's got a spreadsheet. Don't look for it now, but you can play along at home, which is quite good. So I'm gonna, if you know the cycles, because you know you've played some Magic, you can figure out what's going to be the missing one. These are cycles, so I'm going to warn you ahead of time. A lot of these are land based, because
you can pay one to discard them and draw a card.
That's right. Yeah. Yeah.
Sorry, took a while to click.
So
Tranquil Thicket.
I'll be here all night.
You have to pick the one in this cycle that is
cycle
not
Barrenmore.
In a Pro Tour winning deck. So first theme, World Wake man lands or creature lands.
Right, so we have to work out which
I've
one's
forgotten
the
names. Are we allowed to just describe them if we don't know the name?
I've got all the names written down in front of me. I was quite
blue black
my
one.
Planning.
Right. Will it give anything away if I just say out loud what they are all called?
No, not at all.
Of course.
So it's Creeping Tar Pit, Lab Claw Reaches, Stirring Wildwood.
So
Celestial
we can,
Colonnade.
So we can do this one.
Colonnade was in.
Are we a team or against each other?
We're a team.
You're a team. Sorry.
We can discuss it. Okay. So Colonnade was in that modern Pro Tour that was won by
Lava
the
Lava Claw Reaches and Raging Ravine were both in Jund.
Yeah, they were both in Simon Gertsen's deck. So now it's the green, white, or the blue, black.
Creeping
Do we think Fairies has won a Pro Tour with it, maybe?
Yeah.
So maybe it's green, white?
Green, white's not won a Pro Tour. Blue, white's the only one that's been a promo.
That's not relevant at all, Neil, but thanks.
What? Might be.
What's the name of the Canadian guy that won the Pro Tour with blue, white, red? It's annoying me.
Sean McLaren.
That's the one. So yeah, so I think I'm going to stick with my original
Stirring
Creeping
Wild
Tar Pit. No, I'm going to go with Creeping Tar Pit.
I think
Creeping Tar Pit's won one.
But in what?
Has Fairies not won one?
Did Fairies win a Pro Tour?
Wait, it did, but I think it might have been pre-Creeping Tar Pit.
I don't know if these stats included Worlds as Pro Tours.
So is that implying that the green white one has? I think the green white one has won Worlds with that Nail Lightsaber deck, right?
That didn't win Worlds, did it?
Yeah, definitely did. I don't know if the green white land was in it, but anyway, I'm going with blue black. What are you guys going for?
I think green white.
I think blue black as well. So casting vote blue black.
Yeah, blue black.
I'm afraid it was Stirring Wildwood, the green white one.
Oh,
thanks, guys.
You lose as a team.
Never mind.
Right, another lands one.
Are you not going to give us the, like...
No, he said he doesn't know
I don't know the lists.
Oh, okay.
I remember Raging Ravine, Lava Glory, just where Jun, Celestial Colony was in Sean McLaren's deck. I think Creeping Tar Pit was in the Worlds that was won by the Finnish guy, Antti Maalin.
Yeah.
Okay.
Right, next land. Vivid Lands.
So which ones were in Nassif's deck? All of them but the white one, right?
I think so, yeah.
I'll let you choose it by colour if you want.
White, Meadow. Well, they're Meadow, Grove.
No, the white one was in it, wasn't it? Wasn't there one? It's got to be green, right? Because his deck wasn't green.
Oh, was it not? Was that pre-Cloud Thresher?
Yeah, I don't think he played Cloud
Thresher. Yeah, you're right, he did have the white one. I remember, because I remember the two lands he couldn't cast Ultimatum off were two white Vivid lands with no counter still on them. He had nine lands, and the other seven are the ones he cast it off.
I love that, like, we've gotten in on this one, because it's like, I can remember when I played against him at the Pro Tour.
When he beat me.
Yeah. You're right.
With the lucky
green
top deck.
Yeah, it's got to be green, because his deck didn't... I'm going to look at his deck list after this.
So consensus? But
I'm locked in on green.
Yeah, Vivid
green.
Grove?
Vivid Grove.
It was Vivid Grove. Congratulations.
Whee.
Okay, so original Planeswalker characters. I don't mean the original Planeswalker cards. I mean the characters.
So
which one of them has
Jace,
not had a Planeswalker?
Liliana, Ajani,
yeah, which
Chandra,
one of them? Which one of them has not had Eric? A card that's won a Pro Tour?
Well, the five I just said, correct.
What was it? Sorry, Jace,
Jace Liliana, Ajani, Chandra, Garak.
Yeah.
Okay. Jace must have won a Pro Tour, right? There's no way he hasn't.
Yeah, Jace.
It'll be meant
Jace
if Jace is the one that hasn't.
Liliana.
It's got to be Chandra.
Of the Veil must have won a Pro Tour.
It's got to be Chandra. Like, Chandra's the one I
don't know.
Go to.
Yeah, it has to be Chandra, doesn't
what?
It?
The old Chandra Ablaze deck. The Tybalt Chandra Ablaze deck
was great.
Last page through the Pro Tour.
Well, the green white Ajani must have beaten in a recent Pro Tour as well. I think maybe it was in Shaping.
It's
got to
be Chandra.
Green white Ajani. Oh, yeah, green white Ajani. Yeah.
The Mentor of Heroes.
Don't know if he. Maybe he played it, yeah.
Yeah.
Hello?
Is everyone still here? Sorry, Skype's gone a bit dodgy.
Yeah.
Hello?
Alright, sorry. We'll carry on then.
Welcome
Neil's back. We lost you for a bit. We're all back.
Okay.
Did you know what we're discussing, right? The Planeswalkers?
Yeah. I was talking about Chandra.
Yeah,
I
think
I'm pretty
sure
it's got to be Chandra. But.
Has Garak. We haven't discussed Garak much. Has he won anything?
Idiots. Sean McLaren played a Ajani Vengeance, didn't he?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, so that one's definitely been. Definitely Ajani, definitely Jace. Liliana?
I'm going to assume that
Liliana's
a Jund
been
deck
in, like, some
with Liliana
Jund deck
has won.
But
yeah.
Jund, since Liliana hasn't won a Pro Tour.
Yeah, that's true. And the other Lilianas are all bad, aren't they?
Hasn't Liliana Vest been in some control deck? Like, presumably this is just in the list, not like, so in the sideboard's fine.
Yeah, I think so.
I think so.
As long as there's at least one in the 75.
That might give Chandra an in as well, then.
Yeah, that's what I think. I think some sideboards might have played a few Chandras.
No. Arilax played Liliana and Ajani, didn't he? Because that was standard, the Pro Tour that I played, Hawaii.
Oh, did he?
Yeah.
Is it Garak?
I think it's either Garak or Chandra in that case, but I think it might be Garak, because I can't think... Who would have played Garak?
No. Garak's been in one.
Garak Wildspeaker's got a
Pro Tour game. LA that we played, Mateo, was won by the Green Black Elves deck, and I'm pretty sure that deck played Garak.
All right, Chandra then. Let's go for Chandra.
You're correct.
Lock it in.
Yeah, it was Garak Wildspeaker and Liliana Vess were in Pro Tour Barcelona, or Hollywood, was it? With Charles Gindi?
Yeah, Charles Gindi's Elves, yeah.
Yeah, Ajani's won in two different forms, the red-white and the green-white. Ones have both won it. It's a shame his original card hasn't won one, because the Jace, the Liliana, and the Garak, their original printings were actually in Pro Tour winning decks. So that was nearly a complete cycle without the stipulation of just the characters.
Never mind.
A joint one this time. There is one. So the original duel lands. There is one allied duel and one enemy duel. So four allied and four enemy have won.
Oh, I see.
One
so
of
I
each
know.
Haven't.
My ideas will be Badlands and Plateau, because they're the cheap ones.
It's definitely It's definitely Badlands, because I remember talking to Tim Willoughby about this cube and him saying that Badlands wasn't in there. And I have no idea on the other one, so I'm going to say Plateau as well.
Yeah, Badlands and Plateau.
Nothing useful to say, so sure.
Sorry, but you're wrong. Badlands is in the cube. The missing enemy duel is Bayou.
And really?
Bear in mind that when these cards were being played,
yeah,
Tarmogoyf and Thoughtseize weren't like the staples of Eternal formats that they are.
Oh
now.
Yeah, true.
And the allied duel that
it's got to be underground sea, isn't it?
It's underground sea.
No. What?
Is it really?
It is.
I so nearly said underground sea because it's the most ridiculous idea.
They're like the two. Like, I know a lot of people, and I wouldn't disagree with them, that said if they were going to like play Legacy, they're the two dual lands they would definitely be playing.
I assume neither of these wins were with a Legacy deck, though, because you don't get Legacy Pro Tour. So this must have been back in the day.
Yeah,
day
two,
it's,
yeah.
It's
yeah.
The deck. So, like, obviously Tundra was in that, and yeah.
Whatever, well, everything else was in at some point.
That's brilliant.
That's quality. That's a really good one.
Okay, the Alpha Boons.
Healing Salve.
I wouldn't be so sure.
Well,
was that not in the deck?
So the Alpha Boons, are they all the threes?
Yeah. So the,
Ancestral
the,
Recall,
the
Dark Ritual, Lightning Bolt, Giant Growth, Healing Salve.
Yeah, they'll do three
I'm
or something.
I'm going to assume Healing Salve also.
I'm going to go Giant Growth.
Giant Growth definitely has.
Why?
Which one?
Just has. It might be Ancestral Recall. Has it actually won a Pro Tour?
It must have done.
No.
If it was legal while the others were, surely it must have done.
But will it have been legal?
Oh, that's a good point, actually. But how would Healing Salve and Giant Growth have won a Pro Tour? Like,
Giant Growth, like, Stompy.
Stompy go for Recall, then?
Big balls and say Recall.
Yeah.
No, I don't... Okay. No.
I'm not sure I'm comfortable saying it, but let's... Big balls it, Recall.
I'm not willing to on
recall.
Air... I'm not
You've
willing,
been outvoted,
I'm
Recall.
Not willing for there to be on air my voice saying that... Ancestral Recall can't have won a Pro Tour. That sounds
because
too stupid
Alpha
for me to say. Yeah.
So, what are we...
We're going for Recall.
You're going for Recall.
It's Healing Salve.
You're so silly. Obviously, it's Healing Salve.
Oh.
But I think what's more mental is that someone let someone play a Pro Tour for money with Ancestral Recall in their deck. Like... And what's going to be more ludicrous is that there will have been people at that tournament who
not
weren't playing
Ancestral
Recall.
Recall.
Who were playing Healing
or,
Salve.
Or that Pro Tour, like, in the infant, like, before the Pro Tour cube ever existed, there was a tournament where everyone was playing Recall.
Well, you
like,
hope.
Recall will win.
Unless we're playing Giant Growth.
But do we know what... So you probably don't know, do you, which Pro Tour winning deck had Healing Salve in it? Because I just can't imagine
there wasn't
that.
One.
Oh, no, because it
wasn't
didn't,
one.
Sorry, yeah. Yeah, that right. That's
Giant Growth will have just been some green stuff.
No, Healing Salve dot deck lost to Ancestral Recall dot deck in the final.
Yeah,
he went
forever
you
changing.
Three cards. He went, you gain three life. Oh, you got me.
Right, well, you've guessed two, but you've lost three. There's three more rounds, and then a special inversion round to go.
Rob, okay. I'd like to say halfway through, this game's brilliant.
Yeah,
good.
I really like
this.
This is actually just insane good.
Awesome. Right, so next round, artifact lands. As in lands which also are artifacts, without you having to do anything else.
So we're probably looking at white and green again, aren't we?
It'll be
because Affinity traditionally plays black, red, and blue.
It'll be Tree of Tales. I'm sure Ancient Den.
Yeah, it'll be Tree of Tales. Ancient Den will have been in. Was it Pro Tour Berlin that was Pro Tour Berlin won by elves? It was, wasn't it? Around that time when people were playing Tezzeretti decks, those who would have Ancient Den in.
Yeah, but did any of them win?
I think one might have won a Pro Tour around then.
There was what, that Swedish guy in the top eight, the Tezzerator.
No, is he trying to throw us off?
No.
I think Berlin with elves.
Yeah, I think Tree of Tales, because I think that if you're going to be playing Artifact Lands, green is the colour you're least likely to be playing.
Yeah, all right, I'll go with that.
Let's go with that then.
That's correct. There are actually six, because don't forget about Darksteel Citadel.
Yeah, but yeah.
That, I assumed you meant the common cycle.
No.
Well, no, I just presume you meant Artifact Land, but Darksteel Citadel's in all of them, because it's indestructible. So
yeah,
right.
Why would you not play it?
Yeah.
Okay, so a big cycle here. So you know the 10 fetch lands,
yeah,
like the good ones. Well, one of them hasn't won a Pro Tour.
Oh, right.
I know
this
one.
It's gonna take us a while. Do you?
Yeah. Wow. In the same conversation about Badlands with Tim.
Yeah, but you were wrong. Yeah, you were wrong. Yeah.
Yeah. But I realised what in fact the conversation was about, and that it's Bloodstained Mire.
All right.
I'm going to go for Bloodstained Mire.
Neil?
Because it was
I reckon it's probably
one.
Bloodstained Mire.
Yeah, it was Bloodstained Mire.
Thanks, Tim.
Right, that's two good rounds, so you're currently
the
four
best,
in,
the
three out.
The best part about this is, when Tim listens to this episode, he's going to be like, on the first one, he's like, I didn't say that. It's not true.
Right. I'm like, that was Bloodstained Mire, I meant. 3 questions later.
So you're going to have to think all the way back to Mirage Block.
Neil, it's on you.
The cycle of tutors. One of them hasn't won a Pro Tour.
So is it blue finds instants or sorceries, white finds artifacts, enchantments, green finds lands and creatures?
Yeah.
I'm guessing.
It's,
I think it's the blue one.
No, definitely would have done.
No, I'm pretty sure it's the blue one.
Isn't the red one really expensive?
I can't think what... I don't even know if the others exist. How many are there?
There's 4 from Mirage. Okay. Mirage Block, anyway. If he's just on about Mirage, there's only 3. There's white, green, and blue. If he's on about Mirage Block, black gets Vampiric Tutor.
Yeah, I mean, the white one must have been played in some kind of replenished deck, right?
I did say Mirage Block, that's correct. Just to check.
Okay, so...
Like, Vampiric Tutor certainly has. I'm almost certain it has.
I'm pretty sure Enlightened Tutor has as well.
Yeah. I think it's Mystical Tutor.
This is like the recall thing. I'm not willing to go on air and say that it's Mystical Tutor.
Well, Neil, do you know a deck that the green one was played in?
No. I don't know a deck the white one's played in. I don't know any decks. I don't like...
But the white one must have been played in a replenished deck, because that was really big for a few years, wasn't it? And it must have played the white one.
Yeah. But the blue one, like, has been banned a lot in a lot of formats. Like, it wasn't in standard, and then, like, hasn't been allowed. Although the green one is crap. So.
Yeah, exactly. That's what I'm thinking. Like, I just can't see the green one having...
But people love green decks.
Even the Pro Tour winners love green decks.
True. Yeah, we'll go with the green one.
Green one is correct. Worldly Tutor. I was trying to throw you off with that one, because there isn't a red one. Like, there's Gamble in Urza's Saga, which people often people suggest that Gamble is like the completion of the cycle, but it's not really.
That's such nonsense.
Yeah. Alright, so that's the end of the 8. So you've got 5 right and you've got 3 wrong.
5 and 3?
There is the special bonus round, of course.
I didn't tonight.
Oh,
awesome.
What's the bonus round? Can we gamble it all?
Yeah. So there's a... It's a gamble. Big cycle.
Prisoner's Dilemma.
A big cycle of 10, but this time only one of them has won a Pro Tour. So rather than the only one hasn't, only one has. Can I get a B? and then an O. An M. And another B.
What on earth is happening?
Bomb!
I got you to spell bomb.
Oh, okay. I get you.
So,
the white one was played in an eggs deck that was won by Stanislav Chifka, is that right?
So the big cycle of 10 spell bombs.
Is that? Did I just make that up?
Well, it's going to be eggs, isn't it? Eggs played one spell bomb.
I'm pretty sure it played the white one.
Didn't it play the red one, because that's what it won with?
Did it? Okay, it would be that one.
Didn't it repeatedly deal 2 damage with a red spell bomb?
Yeah, that is what it did.
I'm just probably thinking it's white because it was a second sunrise deck, but should we go for the red one then?
Yeah, that's the answer.
Right, the red one.
Yes, congratulations.
Pyrite.
The red one, isn't it an artifact?
Huh? Pyrite.
Pyrite.
It has a red activated. Yes.
That wasn't very mature of me, I do apologise.
Pyrite spell bomb.
You're correct. Panic spell bomb, the red one.
Panic!
Combo off, stop everything from blocking.
That one repeatedly.
And attack with your 2/4.
Yep. I was surprised that Niall spell bomb hadn't won one.
Who's Niall?
Me.
Yeah, Niall Rigby.
Didn't know you had a spell bomb.
Yeah.
Cool, thanks for that, was fun.
Yeah.
That was really good.
I'm sure we can add that to the regular roster if you can be bothered to do more every week.
I hope you can,
because that was really good. I really enjoyed that.
Yeah.
That was actually brilliant. My favourite part of it was, of course, that it wasn't pack wrap.
Should we end
my favourite part was
treasure?
The fact that I was right and you two were wrong.
Trash the Treasure's good.
Yeah.
Yeah,
Matt, you've got a trash treasure, haven't you?
Yeah, shall I briefly describe it for everyone?
Yeah, go on then.
So this is the segment where once a week, normally me, sometimes Rob, Never Neil.
Once,
oh,
me.
No, it was Neil. It was you that Tarmogoyf time. Yeah, good one.
And last week.
Tarmogoyf's cheap, buy those.
And last week, where I told people to buy all the expensive cards from Modern Masters.
Where I... I have a card in mind that I believe will go up in value that you should buy now, because you can probably turn a tidy profit on, and they're a great investment.
Does it turn the tide?
The guys will take it in turns to guess and ask questions. Normally Mateo will ask ludicrous questions like, "Is it wearing a hat?" Neil will say something bumbling and northern, and Rob will spend all of his time desperately trying to catch up the questions that they've squandered. So, as always, we'll begin with Mateo.
Has this card ever won a Pro Tour?
Lol.
Yes.
Bam. Headshot.
Which narrows it down to 715 cards.
No, that's the old. That's the old. It's 785 or something now.
Oh, is it?
Yeah, 772.
Well, presumably it's in the 715 then. Seeing as Matt was unaware of this. So you get a free bonus 70 knocked off.
Neil?
Which Pro Tour... Oh, no, I can't ask that. I was going to say, which Pro Tour did it win?
Yes.
Is the card blue?
Nope.
Wasn't that difficult a question?
Is the card red?
No.
Is the card an original Mirrodin spell bomb?
Is that genuinely your question?
Yes.
Well... No, it's not.
Oh, I was really hoping for a yes there. Although I wouldn't have actually got the right answer there. The next person would have got it.
Oh, well, Neil?
Is the card green?
No.
Is the card white?
Yes.
Yeah.
Wasn't that the last of the colours?
No, we haven't checked black yet.
All right. Well, we don't need to now.
Is the card... one of the original Planeswalkers, not the actual cards, but the characters.
No. Also, all right, yeah, okay, yeah, Karim.
Neil Spellbomb?
Is the card rare?
No.
Is the card a creature?
No.
I think I've run out of possible options from Rob's questions that are white. Don't know what to do now.
I can't believe you got a helpful one on your first question. That was brilliant.
I know, it's really thrown me off. I don't know what to do now.
You're worried that this will cause some kind of spurt of productivity and enlightenment.
Would the card quit Magic after losing in 8 PPTQ top 8s?
No, it would definitely... go back and try again.
Is the card standard legal?
No.
Is it common or uncommon?
Yes. 12 questions there, guys. 8 left to go.
Dragon. Word.
That wasn't a whisper, guys.
Has
mine was.
Has this card ever been played by David Carf?
Hang on, I'll ask.
Move on with the other questions while you ask.
Well, it's uncommon, because commons are all, like, dirt cheap, aren't they? Although, no, because it might be a legacy commoning type thing. So it's white. Is it going to be Path to Exile? How much are Path to Exiles? They're probably quite expensive. So it's not going to be that.
Han, I think I might have David Carst's mobile number, so I might call him.
Neil, ask your question.
I'm thinking.
I don't.
I'm calculating what I want to ask.
Neil?
Does the card start with a letter in the first half of the alphabet? Mm-hmm. Are you typing out the alphabet?
A to M.
Trying to work out what the alphabet is.
Yeah, I was Googling alphabet.
Was that a yes?
Yeah, it does.
Oh,
it's not Path.
Yeah, exactly.
Rob?
Does it cost 1 to 3 mana?
Yes. You have 5 questions left, guys.
Of course it costs 1 to 3 mana.
Can
playable common or uncommon?
Is it standard legal? No. Does it cost more than 1 to 3 mana? Of course it don't cost bloody more than 1 to 3 mana. Nothing, unless it's Tasiga, nothing costs more than that. What type of bloody question is that, Rob?
I love this. This might be my favourite part of the game every week.
Where Rob just burns questions for no reason at all.
Well, I think I know what it is. So I'm just trying to get to 20.
Did you get it from my brilliant clue earlier?
No.
Okay, carry on.
I probably wasn't paying attention to your brilliant clue.
Can the letters in the card's name be rearranged to make up the name Tom Hall?
What? No.
I think that's quite an easy question to answer.
No, they cannot.
Do I get another question because you can't verify the David Carf one?
Yeah. Sure. Oh, no, wait. He's typing.
Am I? It's not me. Someone's typing. It's not me.
That's me typing to David Carf. I asked him and he said, am I cheating again? Okay, cool. The answer is no. He's not played it.
Is the name of the card an Immordanil app?
Sorry?
Is the name of the card an Immordanil app?
What on earth are you saying?
Like, you don't know what an Immordanil app is?
No.
An Immordanil app is a word.
What is it?
No, I've figured it out.
An Immordanil app is a word backwards... When put backwards, makes another word.
That's not true. Wait.
Yeah, it is.
Is it?
Yeah.
Why is it palindrome backwards? Or is it?
Because it spells a word backwards.
Yeah.
But palindrome is spelled the same.
Palindrome is a word that's backwards. The same forward and backward. And an immordanil app is a word that makes another word when it's turned round. So, desserts is stressed. And they're
okay,
immordanil
sure.
apps.
No, Neil, it's not.
Oh. I just wanted to educate the world, sorry.
So the upshot of all this is that Lingering Souls came out before David Carf started properly playing. Is that
what was that, Rob? What
is it that Lingering Souls came out before David Carf started playing?
Is that your question, Rob?
Uh,
be careful here.
Is it Lingering
is your question
Souls?
Did yeah, yes it is.
Yeah.
And my great clue was when Matteo said if this card had like failed in 10 PBTQ top 8s in a season, would it give up? And I said no, it would definitely come back and try again. Okay, so yeah, these are Lingering Souls, 2+ white sorcery. Put a 2/1 white spirit tokens into play with flying and has flashback for 1 and a black. This card was so good that when there was a block Pro Tour with it in the format, it got banned, so you couldn't play it at the Pro Tour, which I believe... Did any of you guys play that Pro Tour?
Yeah, no. That was rubbish.
Yeah, and... this card's like a staple in the modern junk deck, which is one of, if not the best decks in the format, which I've been playing to various degrees of PPTQ failure in the last 3 weeks, to the tune of like 2 final losses, a quarter final, and a semi-final loss. And with modern season coming up, you should definitely have these in your collection.
That is varying degrees of failure.
Yeah, and in your and in your trade binders as well.
I have 5 copies. I've got 4 set 1s and 1 promo 1, which is in my cube.
Yeah, these are 50p on Magic Madhouse for non-promos, and there's 2 different arts as well, because the F&M promo that you've got, Rob, was in a
Thorin versus Tybalt,
so you can get those
in
like non-foil as well. Yeah, I'd definitely get these. I remember back when the junk decks were only playing 3, and now it's just 4 as a mainstay, and people need them. And these are the sort of card that's like kind of unlikely to be reprinted, so
people start
50p,
playing that.
Take a punt.
People start playing that 5-mana dragon that ones all the and taps all the flyers when it enters the battlefield just because of Lingering Souls, really, didn't they?
Thundermaw?
Yeah, and like cards like Is It Status Caster exist, and like a big part of the junk mirror is Zealous Persecution, because it makes your Goyfs and Rhinos bigger than theirs and kills all their Lingering Souls.
Mm.
So yeah, big good, great one to pick up. And playing junk in modern is like the best.
Cool.
Absolutely so much fun.
Thanks for that. Shall we have some outros?
Please.
Yay!
Woo! So, find us, as always, on Facebook. It's facebook.com/TBEPodcast. You can find us on Twitter. It's just @TBEPodcast. You can also find us all individually. You can try and get me to 600 followers. I'm @MateoOJ. Neil, what are you?
at Trigger Riggers.
Rob.
I'm at Dr. Rob Wagner.
And Matt.
I'm at TBE Matt Light.
And you can also find our website on tbepodcast.com, and please do comment there. We had a couple of comments on a few podcasts recently, which was good to see, almost a conversation starting. So if you do have anything you want us to talk about, we probably will, so do just drop a comment there. Alternatively, you can just email us on tbpodcast@gmail.com, or just comment on our Facebook or Twitter. A few people have been tweeting at us recently as well, which is quite good to see. But yeah, generally just keep in touch, because we love to talk to you guys. Does anyone have anything else to add before we end?
No, just good luck at Utrecht this weekend, or Vegas if you're, or Chiba if you're at any of those.
Yeah, I agree.
Hopefully you'll be watching the coverage otherwise, because if you're not, it just means you hate Magic.
Yeah, I will be watching coverage because I'm free all weekend and my girlfriend is away, so I'll be sat in my room watching Magic.
In your pants.
Yeah, exactly. So yeah, thanks for listening, everyone. Bye.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Bye, guys.
Dragon.